I offer my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, and I welcome you to this week's episode of the Gita series. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and coming to you live from the Sri Sathya Sai Media Center at Prashanthi Nilayam. It gives me great joy, dear listeners, to join you again on this pilgrimage through the Bhagavad Gita. And as always, I'm grateful for this opportunity that Swami has given me, and I'm ever grateful for the company of each one of you on this pilgrimage. We are in the middle of the 10th chapter, right in the middle, you could say. It is about the glorious manifestations of the Lord, the vibhutis of the Lord. And more importantly, what is relevant to us is the contemplation on these vibhutis is meant to enable us to understand the Lord better, enable us to move closer to the goal, which is the Lord Himself, which can be spoken of in the form of knowledge. He is that supreme knowledge that needs to be gained, gaining which there is nothing left to be known, gaining which one does not imagine oneself to be the limited individual or the Jivatma. So that is why these shlokas that come in this Vibhuti Yoga are very important. We covered 4 shlokas last time, shlokas 17 to 20. I'll give you a brief summary of that before we move ahead with the shlokas that we'll be covering today. The 17th verse and the verses before that, a couple of verses before that, are words that Arjuna speaks. So after making a few observations that are in a sense a summary of what Krishna himself has explained, Arjuna asks this particular question in the 17th verse. He says, Katham vidyamaham yogim stvam sada parichintayan. Katham vidyamaham yogin tvam sada parichintayan. O yogi, how shall I know you by remaining ever engaged in meditation? Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintayosmi bhagavan maya. Keshu keshu, and thoughts, and through what objects? Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu, and through what objects? Chintayosi bhagavan maya. O Bhagavan, are you to be meditated upon by me? A very important question. What kind of chintana or thinking process will enable me to know you better, is the question that Arjuna is asking. Of course, the reference here is to the process that Krishna himself has explained. As I just mentioned before, when I started, there are some things that can be seen as manifestations of the divine glory, the vibhutis, and contemplating upon them, that chintana is what enables you to move closer to this truer understanding of the Lord. So Arjuna is asking, what other things I can contemplate on? Keshu keshu. In what else can you be seen and contemplated upon? In the 18th verse, Arjuna says why he is asking for this. What is the idea behind this question that he is posing Krishna? Not because he did not understand, not because he does not have clarity based on what Krishna has explained so far. It's because Krishna's revelations are so nectarous and he is not satisfied with what he has heard so far. Triptihi shrinvato nasti memratam. For I am not satisfied by hearing your ambrosial words. I am not satiated. He also says, please explain in detail about your vibhutis. And that's one part of the shloka. Tell me in detail, tell me all that is to be said. Asheshana, he says, without leaving out any detail, tell me about your vibhutis. Krishna is indeed pleased with this question, but he says in the 19th verse where he begins to talk, it is impossible to tell in detail because the vibhutis of mine are countless. That's what Krishna says. I'm very pleased with your question. I'm happy to speak more, but it is impossible to explain comprehensively about these vibhutis. But Krishna says, I will tell you about that which is prominent, those vibhutis that are prominent, atma vibhutayaha pradhanyataha, the prominent of my vibhutis, I will talk to you about. The 20th verse, as we saw, was an important verse. Swami quotes it quite often in his discourses. So when Krishna starts this explanation of what are the other things that you can contemplate on, he starts with your own self. Why start with anything else? Why think of a universe which is somewhere else, or some cosmic plane which is so distant, or some concept which is so abstract? Start with your own self. He says the first place to look for divine vibhuti is in yourself and the people around you. He says, Aham Atma Gudakesha Sarvabhutashayastitaha. O Gudakesha, O Arjuna, I am the self residing in the heart of all beings. Sarvabhutashayastitaha Aham Atma. I am that divine Atma that is ever existent in each being. Without saying, he says, even in you. The individual is made up of the body, the mind, and the Atma. And Krishna says, of these three, I am the Atma. So if you want to contemplate on me, contemplate on this true self of yours. And this is again, an entire philosophy of sadhana is based on this, isn't it? Trying to contemplate and understanding what this self is. When I say I am, when we say aham, what is this aham? That contemplation of who am I is itself a path which can be followed, and many lifetimes can be spent merely contemplating on this idea of who am I, right? So that is why Krishna says aham atma gudakesha. When you, the atma is one place, the aham is one place where you can start this contemplation from. And then he says, aham adischa madhyam cha bhutanam anta eva cha. I am the beginning and the middle and also the end of all beings. And we discussed in detail what this could connote, what this could mean. The birth of any being happens as a vibhuti, as a reminder of the glory of the Lord. Sustenance or life as we see it, as we are experiencing it within our own self, is a manifestation of His glory. Similarly, death is also a manifestation of His glory. Each one of these can be contemplated upon, is what Krishna is suggesting in that 20th verse. So those were the verses that we covered last time. So Krishna is going to continue his discourse, in the sense he's going to continue to talk about his vibhutis. And we will find very interesting analogies. And this again is a very popular part of the Bhagavad Gita, right? Where Krishna says, I am this among this group. Among this set of individuals, I am this. And there is much to learn and understand from each of those examples that Krishna gives. We'll listen to the 21st verse. I'll give you a brief meaning of that. And then we'll discuss in detail this particular shloka, however much detail I'm going to describe. I'm not going to be comprehensive, and you'll see why. We'll listen to the 21st verse in the voice of Brother Shyam, who's rendered all the shlokas for us. I'll give you a brief meaning after that, and then we'll discuss in detail.
Adityanamaham Vishnu Jyotisham Raviram Shuman Marichir Marutamasmi Nakshatranamaham Shashi.
Of Adityas, I am Vishnu. Of luminous bodies, I am the radiant sun. Of the Maruts, I am Marichi. And among the constellations, I am the moon. So that is the 21st verse of the 10th chapter. Krishna had said, I will tell you about some prominent vibhutis of mine. Another way of looking at what Krishna says in the following shlokas is, all that is being mentioned are vibhutis of the Lord, but he is going to point out those that can be meditated upon or contemplated upon to move closer to the knowledge that Krishna is. So when he says, I am this particular entity among these set of individuals, what I'm saying is, all of them are vibhutis, but this particular individual is a prominent vibhuti that can be contemplated upon. Another point that we must keep in mind, and by means of which we can, I would say, excuse ourselves a little when we are not able to completely comprehend this particular section of the Gita, which is likely to be the case, because I'm telling from personal experience after having gone through some of these shlokas. This is the point I make in defense of that. Suppose you ask me for, say, a location in the city of Bangalore, and I give you directions, and invariably those directions will be based on some kind of common knowledge, right? I'll maybe tell you, you know, you go to Richmond Circle and there you will find this particular landmark, and then you have to take a right. So when I say that, I know where Richmond Circle is, and I presume that you know it too, and probably you will acknowledge it when I'm telling that you know where Richmond Circle is. You have to go there and you'll say, oh yes, I know where it is. And then we, from there, I will give you directions. Or I will tell you, you know, you have to just go to Vidhan Sauda and you have to drive down till the next traffic signal. So my directions to you are based on some common knowledge we share about that city or that location. But if with you there is a person who is absolutely new to the city, or he or she is just, you know, accompanying you, and I'm giving you these directions, and they have absolutely no idea of the city, which means that common knowledge that I'm working on is as good as Greek and Latin to them. So what I'm explaining will make no sense to that person, however accurate my directions are, isn't it? I feel this section of the Gita is a little like that. Not entirely, but parts of it. Krishna is explaining some things that are based on some of the common knowledge about the scriptures and the Vedas. So I possibly will not be able to comprehend myself the immensity or the complete significance of some of the things that Krishna is stating in this segment. And when I don't understand, it is not going to be possible for me to explain it to you or share my understanding with you. There is no understanding in the first place. But the essence of what Krishna is conveying through all of this is the same, right? He might not be creating the same understanding in our mind as he might have created in Arjuna's mind, because it's based on common knowledge of the scriptures. But the essence of what Krishna is explaining is the same. And on the basis of that, we can probably look at the examples that he's giving and try to understand it a little better. And what is that common essence of what Krishna is explaining? Whatever is good, whatever is considered excellent, whatever is seen as remarkable, whatever we marvel at, we appreciate, that is a vibhuti of the Lord. But don't stop there. Contemplate on it, and you will find that the reason why that is seen as a manifestation of the Lord will be understood, and thereby you will find that everything is merely a vibhuti of the Lord, right? That is the pattern. We have understood this thus far itself. Already what Krishna has said, we have understood that this is the pattern based on which Krishna is giving all these analogies. So some of the points that Krishna makes here, though may not strike a chord in us because of our unfamiliarity with some of these concepts and names that are being mentioned, it conveys the same message to Arjuna, and I think it is enough if we are able to understand that much. But of course, we will make an attempt to try to understand. It would be a reason for us to know a little more about what the scriptures say about these things. It is just to kindle a little bit of maybe curiosity. For those of you who might be interested, you could go and read further. So coming back to this shloka, the 21st shloka, Krishna starts by saying, Adityanam, among the Adityas, Aham Vishnuhu, I am Vishnu. So there's the bouncer right away. Adityas, what are these Adityas? Adityas are beings that are mentioned many, many times in the Vedas and other Puranas, right? So as I was saying, Arjuna is certainly familiar with this concept of Adityas, because I'm sure that would have been part of his syllabus as he grew up and as he graduated from the Gurukula, right? So Arjuna is certainly familiar with them, and because of these must be, you know, taught to him from a very young age. So when Krishna says, among the Adityas, aham Vishnuhu, I'm sure that must have struck a chord and he must have understood something from it. Let's see if we can look at that and see if something can be gained. These Adityas, as the Purana state, are the children of Mother Aditi, right? That's how they get the name Adityas. Aditi is the wife of the great sage Kashyapa. And these Adityas are said to be 12 in number. And these are seen as presiding deities for each one of the 12 months, right? There is a boon that Mother Aditi receives from Lord Vishnu. I'm not going into that entire story. And it is because of the boon that Lord Vishnu gives Mother Aditi, he is born as her son. And that is when he takes the Vamana avatar. That is how Lord Vishnu becomes one of the Adityas. Because he was born to Mother Aditi as Vamana, Vishnu becomes one of the Adityas. But then this is the Puranic story, but as concepts, this is certainly deeper than just that story, right? So though all Adityas are divine phenomenon, they are all deities in their own right, and we've always seen this, you know, right from the fourth or fifth chapter. Krishna has been maintaining this and mentioning this. When we spoke about the concept of Adidaiva, right, where Krishna said, I am the deity behind all the deities, I am the source of all that. So when you say that the 11 Adityas are deities that govern a certain aspect of nature, they are indeed vibhutis of the Lord themselves. But among them, he says, I am Vishnu. But Vishnu as an Aditya, if you see, he is an avatar. And he directly represents the Supreme Lord. So the first special vibhuti that Krishna mentions is this. Among the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Then he says, Jyotisham, among luminous objects or luminous celestial beings, Ravihi Amshuman, I am the radiant sun. There are many bright objects in the sky, even as we can observe them, right? In space, there are many, many more. But the most important among all of these, Jyotisham, of all these luminous objects that we can see, what is most important for our existence is the sun, right? That is basic biology, how the presence of the sun, the sun's rays impact our lives directly and indirectly by providing us food, or the direct impact of sun rays on our body. These are all things that we study right from our school days. The interesting thing is, sun is also an Aditya, right? That's why the word Aditya is seen synonymous with sun. We use Aditya as one of the names. But sun is also an Aditya in the sense he is also born to Mother Aditi, and he was given the name Vivaswan or Vivasvata. If you recall, Krishna had mentioned this name right in the beginning of the fourth chapter, that he had said, I taught Karma Yoga to Vivaswan. So though sun is also one of the Adityas, among Adityas, Krishna says, I am Vishnu or Vamana, the youngest Aditya. Vishnu, if you look at the idea behind why Krishna is saying among the Adityas, I am Vishnu. The word Vishnu means he who pervades everything. When he comes in the form of Vamana, the most remarkable feature of that avatar is the size of Vamana, because he is described as a dwarf. And coming in such a form, a diminutive form, he shows that he pervades the entire Vishwa when he measures those three steps, or when he tries to measure those three steps, right? The whole story of Bali Chakravarti, the celebrations of Onam that we observe year after year is based on this episode, right? So he comes as a diminutive form, as a dwarf, but then he pervades the entire Vishwa. If you recall when we were discussing the shloka where Krishna said, Mam Anusmara, we had said how Anusmarana also means thinking of God the way he has to be thought about, the way he has been described by the scriptures. That is one of the explanations that we had given for Anusmarana. Smarana is to think. Anusmarana is to think in the right manner. Right? When we were discussing that, and we discussed, I think, about 8 names that the scriptures give, and each one of those names are statements and phrases that come from different Upanishads, right? It goes, I think, Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Manoraniyam Sam Anusmaredyaha. He who meditates on the Lord as such, Kavim Puranam, and so on and so forth, he reaches me, right? That was one of the statements that Krishna made in the 4th chapter. I'm sorry, not the 4th, the 7th chapter, if I'm not wrong, or the 8th chapter. So one of the points that Krishna makes at that time is Anoraniyam, smaller than the smallest, or subtler than the subtlest. And this is, as we said that time, directly from the Kathopanishad. The complete sentence being Anoraniyam Mahato Mahiyan, subtler than the subtlest, larger than the largest. The Vamana avatar, if you look at it, was a demonstration of this quality on which one can perform Anusmarana. So there is a connection between what Krishna said as Anusmarana there. And he said, if you want to do Anusmarana, think of this statement that describes the Lord, Anuraniyam, which is representative of this whole statement, Anuraniyam Mahato Mahiyan. So if you want to do Anusmarana, he had said that you can contemplate on this phrase that is a description of the Lord. And here he says, I will mention to you those prominent vibhutis that you can contemplate on. Maybe that is why Krishna says that among the Adityas, if you wish to contemplate on one, you can contemplate on Vamana, because he represents Anuraniyan Mahato Mahiyan. You can see that connection between what Krishna said there and what he's saying here. When you talk about the sun, Swami would say there is much to learn from the sun. Oftentimes, Swami would say, God's grace is like sunlight, or even the Upanishads for that matter, make statements where you can look at the sun and understand the principle of the Atma. In fact, the same shloka that I was quoting, from chapter 4, Krishna describes the Lord as Aditya Varnam, effulgent like the sun. And we had spoken in detail why Aditya Varnam is significant, because of the self-luminescent nature of the sun. It is available for us to study. So it is very interesting that here is sun, who is also an Aditya. But he says, among the Adityas, if you want to contemplate on Vishnu or Vamana. Among the luminous bodies in the sky, if you want to contemplate on the sun. So that is why I said, when Krishna says the 12 Adityas, all 12 Adityas are Vibhutis. But if you want a prominent Vibhuti to contemplate on, it is Vishnu. There are many luminescent bodies in the sky. All of them are different manifestations of His glory, Vibhutis. But if you want to contemplate on one and understand me better, contemplate on the sun. Then Krishna says, Marutam, of the Maruts, Marichihi Asmi. I am Marichi. Again, this is a reference to a concept, and a few concepts, I should say, in the scriptures. Just like the Adityas, which are deities corresponding to some natural phenomena, the Maruts are also a few deities that are associated with some natural phenomena. The Maruts are the deities that govern the winds that blow in space, within us, and all through the universe. Some Puranas say there are 49 Maruts. Some say there are 7. these are all topics in themselves. As I say many times during the series, I do not have the knowledge to speak about all these topics. And even if I were to do the research and share with all of you, then this pilgrimage will never come to an end. It will be an endless, ananta explanation of the Gita. So I'll just mention very briefly, so that, as I was saying, in case any of you are interested, you can take up the reading of these things further. So I'll give you a very brief idea about this concept of Maruts. As I was saying, the Adityas are children of mother Aditi, who is the wife of sage Kashyapa. Kashyapa had another wife who was Diti, and Diti was a sister of Aditi. So Aditi and Diti were two wives of sage Kashyapa. And her children, Aditi's children, were called Adityas. Diti's children were called Daityas. And when I say Daityas, it might strike a chord, because Daityas are the names given for the demonic forces. So when Adityas were considered as positive forces and deities that govern natural phenomena, Daityas were the demons or asuras. Now Lord Indra is again one of the Adityas. We'll have a mention of him little later, very shortly. We'll come to that later. So Indra is also considered one of the Adityas, and who is a king of the Devas. A little bit of knowledge of the Puranas, we know that the demonic forces who are governed by the great Rakshasas like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. Incidentally, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu are also children of Mother Diti and sage Kashyapa. So there's always this battle happening between the Daityas and the Devas who are governed by Lord Indra. So Diti is very disturbed by this idea that whenever there is a battle, eventually, you know, all her sons seem to be on the losing side. And, you know, we all know about the various battles in which Lord Vishnu comes and helps. So she's very perturbed by this. And so she goes to sage Kashyapa and says, I would like to give birth to a son who can be strong enough to defeat and kill Indra. When she prays to Kashyapa thus, he says, okay, I'll give you that boon, but then you will have to follow a very strict vratam for an entire year. And he gives a huge list of things, do's and don'ts, what you should eat, what you should not eat, when you should eat, when you should not eat, what you can wear and whom you can meet and whom you can contact and all of those things. A very rigorous vratam is given to her and said that if you are able to follow this for an entire year, then you will gain a son who is strong enough to defeat Indra. The story goes that Indra gets to know about this boon that Kashyapa has given Mother Diti and decides to come and disrupt this plan. So he comes to Mother Diti in the garb of a servant, of a dasa. And he says that, Mother, you're pregnant and you're doing this vratam. Please allow me to serve you. Let me be in your service. So she's happy to have a servant because of the vigorousness of the vratam. So she employs this servant without knowing that it is in reality Indra. One day when she's following all of these vratams vigorously, she makes one small flaw. She doesn't follow one aspect that has to be done during one particular day. And when she gets involved in this lapse, the Puranas say that Indra enters the womb of Mother Diti and decides to cut up this fetus which is there, right? He brings his Vajrayuda and cuts this fetus into 7 pieces. Then he doesn't realize that he thinks that by this manner he would be killing the fetus, but it becomes 7 children after he has cut it up into 7 pieces. Now that is the amount of tapas that the mother has borne, that he is not able to kill the child. So when he makes this fetus into 7 pieces, all these 7 children that are formed out of it start crying. So to silence them, Indra, who is also in the fetus, says, Ma Ruda, means stop crying. And that is how they get the name Ma Ruta. And then fearing that he's going to be cursed by Mother Dithi, he comes out, and when she wakes up, she falls at her feet, and he says, "Mother, I've done a very wrong thing. Please forgive me." And in return, he says, "I will give a boon that all these sons will not die. I will not ever be against these sons who are born to you. The reason why I wanted to kill them was so that to save my own self, right? I know that they will be born to be my enemies and they'll have enough power to kill me. So I just wanted to protect myself, and that is why I did this. So I give you the boon that these children will live. And also, as you had wanted, when together, when all of them combined together, their power will be more than that of me. But individually, they're not going to be strong enough to defeat me," right? That's the boon he gives. And Mother Dithi is also happy. And eventually, these Maruts, the seven Maruts are called Avaha, Puravaha, Nivaha, Pravaha, Udavaha, Samvaha, and Parivaha. These are the seven Maruts. As I was saying, in some stories, they say there are 49 Maruts. And those Puranas say that Indra did not stop there. He was not satisfied. So each of these seven Maruts, he again made them into seven pieces. And that is how they say there are 49. But the seven categories are still given the same names that I just mentioned. So then these Maruts, after they are born, instead of becoming enemies of Indra, they become part of Indra's forces. And that is how they are assigned the role of deities that are in charge of various winds that govern creation. The winds that bring a storm, the winds that bring rain, the winds that float clouds, the winds that operate within our body, the winds that operate in subatomic spaces, the winds that regulate the cosmos. So they are considered to be very, very powerful, the seven Maruts. They are, the way they are depicted in the Puranic art is also such that they are shown as very, very powerful warriors. So any movement that happens is considered as being governed by these Maruts. Now coming to Krishna's words here, Marutam Marichihi Asmi. I am Marichi among the Maruts. I just mentioned the names of the seven Maruts, and you would have noticed that there is no Marichi in that. The Marut who is called Parivaha, another name for that Marut is Marichi. So when Krishna says Marutam Marichihi Asmi, he is saying I am Parivaha Marut among the Maruts. What is the significance of this, and what is special about this Parivaha that Krishna says I am that among the Maruts? As I just said, these are Maruts that govern all movement within us and without us. But in the body, when we talk of movement, when these divine forces are individualized in the jiva, they are called pranas. So five of these seven Maruts pertain to the five pranas that enable all kinds of movements in the body. Nerve movement, blood movement, circulation, digestion, air movement, all of that come under the rule of these Maruts. The five pranas that we've spoken about even before, prana, apana, vyana, udana, samana, all of that only regulates every physiological activity that happens in this body. So if you look at it, udavaha, the Marut is related to udana prana. Samvaha, that Marut is related to Samana Prana, and so on and so forth. So Paravaha, that Marut, as the name suggests, pertains to that which is Para or Supreme or which is transcendental. So Paravaha does not necessarily have a representation as a Prana in the body. Paravraha is the vibrations that correlate to this entire creation, that is the base vibration, right? That is beyond human experience. That is why the name para. Vaha means wind element, right? So paravaha means that vibrational wind element which is beyond human experience. It is not that it is not existent in human experience, that is the basis, but through human body and through human comprehension, you're not going to be able to contact or understand what paravaha is. Parivaha is that movement that correlates to pulsation of the individual soul or jivatma. It is almost like the conditioned paravaha. Paravaha is supreme. Parivaha is that which is related to this individual jivatma. And each of these maruts also have a seat in the body. And those, the six seats in the body, are the different chakras that are spoken of in yoga. And this parivaha, which Krishna says, I am parivaha, has the seat in what is referred to as the Agnya chakra, or the space between the two eyebrows. That is why we see this constant reference to that place between the eyebrows, Bhruvor Madhyaha, as Krishna said in the 8th chapter, Bhruvor Madhye Prana Maveshya. At the time of death, all pranas are concentrated in the space between the eyebrows. A very, very significant statement that we came across at that time. I think through this Puranic story, we can understand what it actually means. So this whole thing is so profound and deep if you really look at it. Even the story of Diti, Aditi, Kashyapa and the Maruts. Again, I will try to explain a little bit more before we move ahead. What is the symbolism or inner significance of that story? How deep the thinking process behind all this is? Diti and Aditi are two sisters, right? But if you really contemplate, you understand that they are not two, they are actually one. They are symbolic of darkness and light, night and day. From darkness and light, they are born the bad and the good forces, asuras and devas. Indra is born of light, right? But he represents the mind, and the mind has a dual nature. It can be good, it can also be bad. Now, Diti has the desire to have a son who can kill Indra, which means she wants to put an end to the mind. And that is not an easy task. So Kashyapa, who represents the guru, gives a very strict sadhana to be followed. And he tells Diti that only when you follow this vratam, this sadhana, you will be able to beget a son who can put an end to the mind, who can kill Indra. Now the same mind has to help in sadhana, right? You cannot find another mind to do your sadhana. That is why in the story, Indra himself comes as a servant to help Diti perform this vratam. But the mind is always vile. It pretends to be a servant, but can anytime become the villain, can become the master, right? So Indra pretends to be a servant, only waiting for an opportunity to play mischief. And when there is a slackness in the sadhana, the mind plays its mischief. It cuts up the sun into 7 pieces. These become the pranas that govern the jivatma. And what is the promise that Indra gives Mother Diti? He says, still this child that you have conceived is capable of being more powerful than me and killing me, but only when they all come together. But in a normal human being, they're all scattered. They never come together. For that, first, all the pranas have to be regulated and balanced. And for that balance, the marut that is most significant is samvaha. The samvaha marut is correlated to the samana prana in the body. And the samana prana, as most yogic practices tell us, is seated in the anahata chakra or the heart chakra. So using this Anahata chakra, you are meant to regulate all the other pranas, which means using your higher buddhi, your higher intellect, which is also in the heart chakra, all pranas have to be regulated. And finally, when all these pranas are got together at the Agnya chakra, at the center of the eyebrows, the Parivaha Marut then carries it higher to the supreme state. That Parivaha, Krishna says, is my Vishesha Vibhuti. So there are many such forces within, but he is best represented by this Marichi, which is the connection between the human state and the divine state. And most of these yogic practices, Kundalini practices that we speak of, is actually representative of this whole process. And people who know well about these aspects may say that my explanation was not complete or it was too vague. So the idea was not to be comprehensive. I am not capable of that in this topic, in most topics, to be honest, but definitely not in this kind of very, very esoteric concepts. As I was saying, there are different Puranas, different scriptures. There are different versions of the same stories, different names given for different Maruts. The idea was only to give a glimpse of the concepts that Krishna is very casually touching upon in his Gita, so that any one of you who is interested may just use this explanation as a trigger, as a trail to go and read further. So that is what Krishna means when he says, among the Maruts, I am Marichi. The last point that he makes in this shloka is, Nakshatranam, among the nakshatras, Aham Shashi, I am the moon. This may sound a bit confusing because nakshatras mean stars and moon is not a star. He's saying among the stars I am the moon. That doesn't make much sense. Here nakshatras mean constellations, right? There are these zodiac constellations that we speak of in astrology, both Western and Oriental, and the Sanatan Dharma. So these constellations are referred to as nakshatras, and the way the sentence is framed, it does not suggest that I am the moon among the stars, like in the previous two statements, among the Maruts I am this, among the Adityas I am this. Apparently the grammar of those statements itself suggests that in this group, I am this entity. In this particular statement, nakshatranam aham shashi, here it is more like, to the constellations, I am what the moon is. Right? So that is how he says, if you look at the constellations, what role the moon plays, I am that. You can contemplate on me as being that. Another explanation that is given is, the word nakshatra also means the place one goes to when one performs a ritual. There are various realms that are promised as a reward when certain rituals are performed, right? Chandraloka is compared to be, is spoken of as the best among such rewards. And we have come across this earlier too. Chandraloka is not the moon per se, but it is a reference to heaven, right? That is the highest that you can reach through the activity of the body and the mind. So these are two different interpretations to the statement. But again, the idea conveyed here is, and in the previous statements is, I am the most remarkable in any group, or any entity that stands out can be contemplated on as my vibhuti. I think that is the most important message that is to be taken from these statements. We'll go to the next statement, the next verse, the 22nd shloka. We'll listen to it. I'll give you a brief meaning of that, and then we'll try to understand better what Krishna is conveying there.
Vedanam samavedosmi devanamasmi vasavaha indriyanam manaschasmi bhutanamasmi chetana.
Of the Vedas, I am Samaveda. Of gods, I am Indra. Of sense organs, I am the Manas. And of living beings, I am consciousness. So that is the 22nd verse. Krishna continues in the same vein of explanations. He says, Vedanam, among the Vedas, Samavedaha Asmi. I am the Samaveda. This is also a reiteration of a point that Krishna had made in the 7th chapter itself, where he was saying something very similar, when he was saying that I am the Buddhi of the Buddhiman, the Tejas of the Tejasvi, the wetness in the water, the effulgence in the fire, and so on and so forth. At that point, he had made the statement, Pranavaha Sarva Vedeshu. I am Pranava in the Vedas. Here in this verse, he is saying, Vedanam Samavedaha. Right? Vedanam Samavedaha Asmi. Among the Vedas, 3 or 4, however you'd like to look at it, I am Samaveda. The Rig, Yajur, Sama, or Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, if you look at it as 4 Vedas, he says, among the Vedas, I am Samaveda. Swami would often say this, the essence of the Samaveda is the Pranava Mantra. In fact, this declaration comes from the Chandogya Upanishad, and Swami would often quote this. It's a very important verse in Chandogya Upanishad. It gives a series of statements. It makes a series of statements where it says that the finest representative of this is this particular individual, and from there comes this essence, and eventually it says the importance of Samaveda and the Pranava Mantra. Maybe I'll just quickly read out those few lines from the Chandogya Upanishad. It says, Esham Bhutanam Prithivi Rasaha Prithivya Aporasaha. The earth is the essence of all things, living or non-living. Water is the essence of the earth. Here the word rasa, Esham Bhutanam Prithvi Rasaha. Here rasa does not necessarily mean the essence. It means the best outcome or the best attribute, right? All beings are born, they live, and they return to the earth. Esham Bhutanam Prithvi Rasaha. The earth, in that sense, is the basis, is the essence of all beings. The essence of the earth can be found in water. Prithivya Apurasaha. Then he says, Apamoshadayo Rasa. The essence of the goodness of water, the essence of whatever rice, water is capable of, water is invariably representative of prana, right? Of life itself. Life is supposed to be contained in water. And that essence of water is to be found in Oshadayaha. Oshadayaha means medicines or herbs. It is representative of the entire body of foods, right? So, Apomoshadayo Rasa means the essence of water is to be found in food, plants or herbs. All beings consume this food, and that is how they progress, right? So, the best product of, all beings come from consuming this food, but the best of all these beings should be considered as the rasa of food. And that is how it says, man is the pinnacle of all beings, and that is why Oshadhi Naam Purusho Rasaha. Man is the essence of all these food. Purushasya Vagraso. What is the best aspect of man? It is Vak, the faculty of speech. That is what the Chandogya Upanishad says. As we have discussed many times earlier, the ability to communicate thoughts is one of the most important qualities that has made the human species stand apart from the rest of creation, right? That's why he says, Purushasya Vagrasaha. The faculty of speech is the pinnacle of this human experience. And of all things that can be uttered, what is the essence or what is supreme of all this, all that can be expressed in word? Vach Rig Rasa. Rik or mantras are the essence of all speech. Richaha Samarasaha. And of all riks or mantras, the Sama Veda is the essence. Why is Sama so special? Because the essence of Sama is Pranava or Omkara. The final statement is Samna Udgito Rasa. Udgita is the essence of Sama, and Udgita, which means the song that elevates or fills one with life. Udgita is another name for Pranava Mantra. So Sama Veda is special because it represents Pranava. Samna Udgito Rasaha. And you can see what Krishna said in that 7th chapter when he said, among the Vedas, I am the Pranava, is actually the same thing that he's repeating here. Among the Vedas, I am Sama. There is no difference between the two if you look at it from that point of view. There is another reason why Krishna says, I am Sama Veda. Essentially, all riks are mantras. They are prayers, right? They are some form of worship. Even those that may be descriptive of creation or some which are about rituals or instructions on how to lead life, even they are actually considered to be some form of prayer, because even if you do not understand their meaning, you can chant these mantras and it can be considered as a form of worship, right? So all riks, if you look at it that way, are only a form of worship. And Samaveda is nothing but very similar to Rig Veda. If you see many of the mantras that come in Samaveda, they say are mantras that come earlier in the Rig Veda. But the intonations are in such a way that they are very musical. And also that is why it is said that all music is born from Samaveda. Swami explains this in one of his discourses. Maybe it is slightly a diversion over here, but I'm just mentioning it here again just to place it before you. And if at all any of you are interested, you can go and read further about what Swami is speaking here. I will quickly read out a passage from one of Swami's discourses. Swami delivered this on October 1st, 1987. I will not explain too much of what Swami says. I'm just, as I said, putting it here in case any of you are interested. Swami says, and I quote, Sage Vyasa first taught the Samaveda to Maharishi Jaimini. From Jaimini, it was taught to a succession of disciples, and in the process, it developed many shakhas or branches. One of the 1,000 branches which stemmed from the Veda, out of the 1,000 branches which stemmed from this Veda, today only 3 have survived and has practitioners. The others have been lost by the ravages of time. These 3 branches are Kaudima, which is followed by the Nagara Brahmanas of Gujarat, Ranayani, which is with its adherents in Maharashtra, and Jaimini, followed by a section in Karnataka. The Jaimini Shaka is a short one, but is more important than the others. It is broad-based and has a wider appeal because of its accent on musical form. There are 2 versions of it. Aranyi, forest hymns, and Ganam, musical hymns. There are 4 kinds of songs in these hymns. Gramina Ganamu, village songs. Aranyaka Ganamu, forest songs. Uha Ganamu and Uhya Ganamu. These are enjoyed. Swami then goes on to speak about Gramina or village songs, the songs which used to be sung by villagers in their daily activities or during festivals and groups and dances. They enjoyed themselves in singing such songs, and that is Gramina Ganam. Aranyaka are songs that were sung while taking cattle to the forest for grazing. So these songs were sung with a full-throated voice in an uninhibited way. Singing the praise of the Lord, sitting under a tree, they derived spontaneous delight from these songs. Uhaganam resembles the cinema music of our days. Here the singer expresses in the rendering the mood of the song, either grief or joy, by artificial modulations of the voice to produce the impression of grief or joy as conceived by the singer. It lacks genuine feeling Uhyagana, the fourth category, is the type of singing in which the singer gives free vent to his emotions and enjoys the singing as much as he seeks to communicate his joy to others. The Sama Veda has given to the world all these four kinds of music. End of quote. So the Sama Veda is special because it is the source of all music. As I was saying, I just read out that passage because it's so fascinating where Swami is very clearly telling about the origin of music, right? So that is why whenever we speak of Sama Veda, those of you who are not probably familiar with that, whenever Sama Veda is spoken of, it is spoken of in the context of it being the source of all music. In fact, when we were in hostel, we used to have this program in our university, I think on every Tuesdays or something like that, where the best of the musical talent used to be presented, and that presentation used to be offered to Swami as part of our prayer sessions in the hostel. And that program used to be called Sama, right? And I think we also have a series of productions in the Radio Sai, which we refer to as Sama. The whole idea comes from this concept that all music is considered to have originated from the Sama Veda. So whenever you say Sama or Sama Veda, it is a reference to this musical aspect of worship. There is this saying that used to be told to us when we were children. I think my father used to tell me this. It goes that if you stand and pray, God will sit and listen. If you sit and pray, God will be lying down and listening. But it is when you sing and pray, God will dance and listen. Right? It's a very beautiful statement, because He is Gana Priya. The best way to pray to Him is through music. So when Krishna says, I am Sama among the Vedas, it could also be a declaration that among the various ways by which you can invoke and worship me, to sing and worship me is the best. Right? So that is why he says that among the Vedas, I am Sama. The next statement he makes is, Devanam asmi Vasavaha. Among the gods, I am Vasavaha. Vasavaha is another name for Indra. As I was saying, Indra is also an Aditya. But among the Adityas, he doesn't say I am Indra. Among the Adityas, I am Vishnu. But among the Devas, I am Indra. Which means Indra is also a vibhuti of the Lord, right? That's what I was saying. All of these are vibhutis, but which vibhuti can be contemplated upon? So contemplate upon Indra as my special vibhuti when we are talking about the Devas. Indra, as we all know, is supposed to be the king of the gods. What makes him more exalted than all the other divine beings? When you read the scriptures, when you contemplate on that, you will realize that there is nothing that is special about Indra which has given him that status in life, right? There's nothing remarkable about Indra. In fact, you will find that he is such a flawed personality, that he's always insecure about his authority, he's always worried about who will come and take away his position. He seems to be a very flawed personality. But then why is he the king? He has been elevated to that status only because of Ishwara Kripa, or the grace of the Lord. The reason why Krishna is mentioning Indra as Vibhuti, I think this itself is the purpose behind that. If you really look deep, this is the case with each one of us, right? With all the Vibhutis of the Lord that Krishna mentions, this is the case. He says, among all the luminous bodies, I am the sun. Who made one celestial object a sun and others distant stars which do not matter to us? Who made one heavenly body the Sashi or moon? In the same way, when we contemplate on our own status and achievements in life, we will see that it is nothing but His vibhuti. I am a president of a company. I am a director. I am a CEO. I am a trustee. What makes one stand above the rest? I am speaking to all of you and you are all listening. What gave me this role? If I were to contemplate on that, you know, we may come up with answers like, oh, I have this skill, I have these achievements and I've done this. But when you look deeper, where did that skill come from? I was brought up in a certain way. I was sent to a certain school. I was given a certain training. Where did that course of actions or choices come from? If we were to keep going back and contemplating, we will come to the conclusion it was because He willed it so. So when Krishna says, Devanam Asmi Vasavaha, I feel it means, it is my vibhuti that Indra is the king of gods. So when you contemplate on Indra as my special vibhuti, you will find that among equals, if one is elevated, and we are all equals, however different our educational backgrounds may be, our skill sets may be, we all are equal at the end of the day, right? So among equals, if one is raised to play a certain role of authority, raised to play a certain role of influence, it is only because God has ordained it so. And that contemplation is helpful, right? We don't contemplate deep enough. We just take it for granted. Why are you this? Oh, because I'm talented. Why are you that? Oh, because I deserve it, right? No. When contemplated deeply upon, Devanam Asmi Vasavaha, among the equals, why are you special? You are special because I have ordained it so. This is not yet complete. We have not yet completed the 22nd verse. There are a few more statements that Krishna makes in that. But I think we'll have to conclude here, dear listeners. I thought I'll be able to complete that shloka too. We'll push that for next week. Thank you for joining me. If you have any comments that you'd like to share, if you feel that what I said was too confusing or too incomplete, if you would like to add anything to that, feel free to write to me. You can write to our email feedback. You can write to our WhatsApp number. Either way, it reaches us. So thank you for your company. Thank you for being with me. I most humbly offer this at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the Outside Inside Deep Inside segment. I'm not coming back for the afternoon satsang, but I'm going to play for you the continuation of the satsang that I played last week. Living with Swami is True Education. So that will be played after Bishu's segment. Till I meet you all next week in the resumption of this Gita pilgrimage. Take care. Keep safe. Jai Sainam.